is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I think what we're looking at here is really a symbolic gesture from the department.
That's Lauren Landu, head of the African Center for Migration and Society in Johannesburg, on new rules for foreign workers to be released soon amid concerns about a renewed rise in xenophobia. Details coming up. Also, Amnesty International says Tigrayan fighters have committed war crimes in Ethiopia's Amhara region. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. In Paris today, President Emmanuel Macron hosts a summit of leaders from nations involved in the fight against militant violence in the Sahel, especially Mali. Tomorrow, the leaders from European Union and African Union nations hold their annual summit in Brussels. Journalist and regional analyst Catherine Field spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson a few hours ago to break down what is expected at the two gatherings.
The summit is essentially a chance for all of the actors to talk about what happens now with military presence in the Sahel. And particularly the big question is, will the French stay in Mali with their troops? If they decide to leave, what will happen with those troops? Where will they go? They are going to wait until the end of the dinner before giving an idea of what they've decided. But we do know for a fact that the French say that the conditions for staying in Mali are not there any longer. And by that, they mean the backtracking on democratic way forward in Mali and also the presence of the Wagner mercenaries in Mali. So they're going to be deciding on that. In that mix as well, and this is why it's such a big meeting, is they're going to have to decide what happens with the EU training mission in Mali, because that depends very much on aerial and logistical support from the French military. They will also have to mix into that what happens with the UN presence in Mali, because they too depend to a greater or larger degree with the French military. What they're doing there with medicines, with logistics, that's also important. So it's going to be a crucial meeting, really pretty much to decide on where France decides its future will be in the Sahel.
What hints, are there been any indications as to what might come out of the gathering this evening in Paris?
The hints are that the French will pull out of Mali. What we're hearing is that the final straw was when the junta in Mali withdrew the accreditation of the French ambassador in Bamako. Now, they're also saying that by pulling out, this would also mean that they could restructure the presence to better react to what is happening elsewhere in the region, and in particular the movement of the jihadis. What they're saying is that they've got to look further south. They've got to protect other countries along the Gulf of Guinea, in particular Ghana, Benin, Togo and Cote d'Ivoire. They need to look at those areas as well. The other thing they're looking at is perhaps they should just move the bases, just move it into Niamey, because Niger is an area that really needs more help. But of course, the question is, if they do pull out, what will be the reaction? Are we at a risk of seeing a sort of Afghanistan-type chaos if they leave? Or are they just going to slowly pull out and concentrate more on keeping the peace and hoping that somehow the Mali junta changes its mind?
Well, next, then, we have tomorrow's the two-day African Union and European Union summit. What's on the agenda there?
The big agenda there is the so-called EU Global Gateway Africa. And this is a rebranding, if you like, of all the other programs that the EU has put together for Africa. What it is, it's a €150 billion package of investment for Africa that should run over the next 7 years. Now, they're looking at this, what they call a common future, and that means a green transition, helping with healthcare, renewables. And so they're going to be looking also at vaccines. They've put aside €1 billion for vaccines. They've put aside $4.3 billion for, to help with startups. And it really will be that, as well as defining other priorities such as finance, agriculture, security, governance, all with a view to how they can not stop and not replace, but certainly slow down the influence of Chinese investment in Africa.
That was Catherine Field, a journalist and regional analyst based in Paris. She was speaking with my colleague, Kate Bond-Dawson. Rights groups Amnesty International says Tigrayan fighters have committed war crimes and possible crimes against humanity as they were withdrawing from Ethiopia's Amhara region. Galmo Dawit reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Amnesty International's report released Wednesday says fighters affiliated with the Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF, killed escorts of Ethiopian civilians in northern Amhara region, looted property and gang-raped women and girls as young as 14 years. Amnesty said the Tigrayan forces committed the atrocities around Chinna and Kobo last August and September after taking control of the areas. The rights group says interviews with survivors indicate the Tigrayan forces were acting in revenge against Amhara militia that were fighting alongside Ethiopian federal troops to push them back. Sari Jackson is Amnesty's deputy regional director for East Africa, the Horn of Africa, and the Great Lakes. In a press release on the report, she said evidence was mounting of a pattern of Tigrayan forces committing war crimes and possible crimes against humanity in areas that were under their control. Jackson called on the TPLF leadership to put an immediate end to the atrocities and remove from its forces anyone suspected of war crimes. The TPLF did not immediately respond to the allegations, but previously denied Tigrayan forces target civilians. The Amnesty report appears to support a December Human Rights Watch report that said Tigrayan forces executed scores of civilians in Amhara in late August and early September. Amnesty and Human Rights Watch released a joint December report that accused Amhara security forces of killing ethnic Tigrayans in Western Tigray region. Throughout Ethiopia's 14-month war, rights groups have accused both sides of gross rights abuse and war crimes, including raping and killing civilians. Amnesty called on international community to investigate crimes committed by both sides and try to bring those responsible to justice. Galmo Dawit for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Burkina Faso coup leader Lieutenant Colonel Paul Henri Sandoval Damiba was inaugurated today to replace the president he toppled. The French news agency AFP reports that Damiba, in a televised ceremony, swore an oath before the country's top constitutional body to preserve, respect, uphold, and defend the constitution 3 weeks after he overthrew President Riek Marc Christian Kabore. Damiba has promised to secure the war-torn country from growing violence linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group that have killed thousands and displaced more than 1.5 million people. Since taking power, Damiba has met with security forces, civil society groups, diplomats and politicians, but has not set a timeline for a return to democracy, which the international community says must be done as soon as possible. South African human rights groups are concerned that the government's scapegoating foreign workers as it faces criticism for a 35% unemployment rate, the highest in the world. The country's Department of Labor and Employment says it is concerned about illegal recruitment practices in South Africa. At the same time, several political parties are demanding that all undocumented foreigners leave the country immediately. Darren Taylor has more.
The government says there are 4 million legal and illegal migrants, mostly from other African countries in South Africa. This is the official number. Some independent groups say the figure's higher. South Africa's economy is in recession, with millions unemployed. Crime and poverty are soaring. Yet conditions in many other African countries are worse. So still the migrants come to South Africa. Its Department of Labor says it's going to announce new rules for foreign workers soon.
I think what we're looking at here is really a symbolic gesture from the department.
Lauren Landau heads the African Center for Migration and Society in Johannesburg. He says South Africa already has strict rules that, in theory, limit numbers of foreigners allowed to work. The problem is that the authorities haven't been enforcing them properly.
So what they're really signaling here is not something new, but rather a recommitment to trying to regulate foreign workers in the South African labor market. I think the broader question is, why are they doing this? And it's clearly a populist move. It's clearly an effort to distract from the fact that they do not have positions which are creating jobs for South Africans. So they're instead trying to put the blame on foreigners.
Landau's research shows foreign migrants are actually creating jobs for themselves and for locals.
I think there's an underlying sentiment which says that foreigners are taking jobs. But I think what government needs to do is create jobs and create better labor conditions. I do not think that what they're proposing now is really part of that. It is an emotional political statement. But unfortunately, with the message that's coming across is not we're here to create new jobs and to improve labor conditions. It's really we are here to take foreigners out of the labor market, and that is going to solve your problems. And I think that's a
local representative for the International Labor Organization, Theo Spadabuem, says some businesses are exploiting foreigners, especially those without work permits, by paying them minimally.
It is an illegal practice, but it also raises tensions in the labor market, and it can encourage xenophobic sentiments. And in that case, it is very important to actually enforce the current legislation.
Because the authorities aren't doing this, says Spadabuem, it creates the environment for violence against migrants. He says good immigration policy allows foreigners to work when their skills are needed in a particular country. Spadabuem adds the ILO is working with the Southern African Development Community, or SADC bloc, on policy reforms.
Labor migration policy should be informed by facts. In the context of SADC, we are supporting the establishment of a labor market observatory. That observatory will provide solid information that can actually inform the labor migration policies and inform where labor migrants are needed in each country at a sub-regional basis.
In the meantime, though, several politicians are whipping up anti-immigrant sentiment, screaming slogans such as South Africans first. And in a country with a legion of jobless youth, they're finding plenty of ears willing to embrace their dangerous messages. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A South African court has dismissed former President Jacob Zuma's application to appeal an earlier decision that dismissed his effort to have lead prosecutor Billy Downer removed from his corruption trial. The ruling has paved the way for the trial to go ahead April 11th. However, legal experts have said Zuma can still approach the Supreme Court of Appeal directly to have his appeal application heard. Tuso Kumalo has more on the story.
Delivering his 60-page decision, Judge Piet Koen of the High Court in Pietermaritzburg dismissed every argument made by Zuma, who claimed Downer would be biased against him after he allegedly shared the former president's medical information with a journalist in a different case. Koen said it was frivolous and absurd for Zuma to speculate what will happen before the trial begins. He said if it turns out to be biased, Zuma has the right to appeal after the proceedings finish. The National Prosecuting Authority, NPA, has welcomed the judgment as a step closer to getting the decade-long corruption case off the ground. NPA spokesperson Tunzimaka addressed the media outside the court.
On the 11th of April, we'll bring our witnesses. So we are happy and relieved that at last we will have the trial resuming.
But the excitement could be short-lived since Zuma can make a direct appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal. The Jacob Zuma Foundation spokesperson Mzwanele Manyi spoke to reporters.
As the foundation, we'll definitely advise Executive President Zuma to petition the appeals court. So I can tell you now, I can't see how the 11th of April is going to happen. And the state is delaying this case. All the state has to do is to remove Downer, then the case happens.
Zuma faces allegations of corruption, money laundering, racketeering and fraud. The charges are linked to corruption that is alleged to have taken place when South Africa purchased arms soon after independence in 1994. French arms dealer Thales is a court defendant. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Zimbabwe government has moved to bar all unvaccinated civil servants subject to certain exemptions. Arigando gives us more on the story.
A circular issued yesterday by Public Service Commission head Jonathan Mutawanashe says those without any underlying medical conditions will be suspended from work without pay, subject to disciplinary hearings. Those qualifying for exemption are required to provide certification that vaccination can worsen their conditions. The commission is the employer of all civil servants in the country. As of the 14th of February 2022, the country has vaccinated a cumulative 4,315,627 people with the first dose and 3,346,937 having received the second dose. Civil servants, especially teachers who work in rural areas, have decried the long chances they have to travel to vaccination. The places are operating with skeleton staffs in order to return to work immediately. Analysts say as the development presents an interesting situation considering the nature.
The reported barring of employees who are not vaccinated provided for in the public service regulations. The proper procedure really is for the Public Service Commission, if it suspects each particular employee of having committed an act of misconduct, to serve that employee with a letter of suspension, which letter details the misconduct allegations against the employee and advises the employee that he or she is suspended pending disciplinary proceedings. And then in due course, that employee must be advised of the date, time and place of those disciplinary proceedings.
Nkomo adds that the edict raises concerns about constitutional labor rights, which entitle every employee to just and equitable and satisfactory conditions of work and the right to administrative justice, which is lawful, reasonable and procedurally fair. Still, Nkomo concedes that the Constitution provides for limitations of those rights in cases of emergency. Musa Kika, a lawyer with the Zimbabwe Human Rights Forum, says the Labour Act is intended to be for the advancement of social justice and democracy in the workplace.
This may be supported under Section 86 of the Constitution on limitation of rights. In this particular case, the justification being a public health emergency. But what may be problematic in addition to that is the issue of disciplinary hearings for those who choose not to adhere to this directive and choose to stay at home without salary. So when one chooses to stay at home without salary, and then they are also subjected to disciplinary hearings for doing that, that would amount to what we call double jeopardy. You have been harmed twice. That becomes the issue that may not pass legal scrutiny.
Crisis in Zimbabwe coalition leader Peter Mtasa, who is also former president of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, decries the lack of consultation with workers.
We checked with the labor leaders. They've not been consulted. We also rely on the position of the trade unions. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions in specific still has a case that is pending in the High Court that is challenging mandatory vaccination. So we think that the government could not make such a huge decision that impacts on workers and their families without seeking an agreement.
Sociopolitical analyst Efinwe believes government priorities are misplaced.
It is unnecessary in the sense that government should be focusing on the bread and butter priorities of the people, focusing on paying its workers better than restricting them from coming to work, and ensuring that they have better living and working conditions. That should be the priority of the government.
Mwe and others believe that if the directive is not successfully challenged in court, it likely will cause job losses and copy immediate action in the private sector.
Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
An attack by the Al-Shabaab extremist group killed 5 people, including 2 children, at the police station and security checkpoint in Somalia's capital Mogadishu yesterday. 16 were wounded. The Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab often targets Mogadishu. The United Nations and other international observers have warned that the group is taking advantage of Somalia's current election crisis to launch more attacks. National elections in Somalia have been delayed for more than a year. A months-long dispute between Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble and his political rival, President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, has been blamed for the delay. Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune's government is introducing youth unemployment benefits as the North African nation struggles with a 15% jobless rate. In an interview broadcast on Algerian television, Tebboune said the payments are aimed at preserving the dignity of young people. According to the French news agency AFP, the allowance of $92 a month, accompanied by medical benefits, will begin in March. Some taxes in consumer products will also be suspended. Algeria, Africa's biggest gas exporter with around 45 million people, earns some 90% of its state revenues from hydrocarbons. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.